Your Bibles to the book of 3 John. We'll be reading there in just a moment. I'd like to thank everybody for coming, especially our visitors. I'm thankful that you're here. It's not too often I get up here. It is a little sooner than the last time. The last time was 3 or 4 years, and this time it's only been a couple months. So hopefully I'll be a little more comfortable up here. The topic today that I'd like to talk about is our example. Whether we realize it or not, we're setting an example to everywhere around us right now. You might say, I'm just sitting here. I'm not doing anything. But in just sitting here, you're telling anyone who's watching you how interested you are to be here. But by being here instead of somewhere else, you're also telling others that you're concerned about doing the will of Christ. Our examples can lead someone to Christ or give them an excuse, not a reason, but an excuse not to be a child of God. If we set a poor example, they may say, well, if that's a Christian, then anybody can be saved. Or they may say, well, if that person's going to heaven, I don't want to go there. If we set a good example, however, we can help lead a soul to Christ that could lead other souls and still more souls in years to come. A positive example can have untold numbers, can lead untold numbers to Christ and to heaven. And likewise, one bad comment or one poor example can turn away one person who in turn, through time and their examples, turns away others. I was researching examples in the Bible when my attention was drawn to 3 John. It's a short book, so I'm going to go ahead and read it, but I believe we can learn a lot from it. Let's take a few moments to read the book of 3 John. I'll be reading from the New King James Translation. It says to the elder, which is John, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Behold, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly with the brethren that came and testified to the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear my children walk in truth. And I think that's something that every parent would like to be able to say. Verse 5, Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers. You have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth with His namesake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. Verse 9, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have preeminence or being first among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds which he does, prating against us or unjustly accusing them with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to receive them, putting them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God. He who does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has a good testimony from all and from the truth itself. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. And then he concludes by saying, I had many things to write, but I do not wish to write to you with pen and ink, but I hope to see you shortly, and we shall speak face to face. Peace to you, our friend, greet you. Greet the friends by name. In the book of 3 John here, we see that John is writing about Gaius, but he also mentions two other people, Diotrephes and Demetrius. We see that Gaius is called the beloved one. He's someone that John cared much for, as we should other fellow Christians. The name Gaius appears a total of 5 times in the New Testament. This one and then 4 other ones. It's hard to nail down for sure whether this is the Gaius that's in some of the other verses. Nevertheless, I think we can still learn our lesson. John begins in verse 3 saying that he has been made joyful of the report that he has heard about Gaius, that he was showing generosity and kindness not only to the brethren, but also to strangers. We're told in Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1 through 3, the scriptures read, Let brotherly love continue. Do Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if they're you, if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since yourselves in the body also. But nonetheless, we read that John was also concerned that Gaius may follow the example of Diotrephes. Diotrephes was one who wanted to be special. He wanted to be special to a point that not only did he not listen to anyone who tried to correct him, and it appears that John has tried to correct him, but also we see that Diotrephes was even casting people out of the church. We could say that Diotrephes was kind of like a spoiled little child. If he doesn't have his way, he kicks you out of his club, quote unquote. Do you remember these kind of kids when you were in school? There's always a bully somewhere, somebody trying to not let you be part of their group. But the church is a little more important than that. But we see here that John instead tried to encourage Gaius to imitate Demetrius, who has a good report of all the brethren and of the apostles. In verse 12 of 3 John, we read, Demetrius has a good testimony of all, and from the truth itself. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. Demetrius is certainly a better example to follow. So what can we learn from 3 John? First thing I believe we can learn is that Christians are not always what they should be. I've had men in my life who I thought very highly of. And in past years, I've had to test them with what I believe the Scriptures to say and determine that I don't believe they're setting an example that I should follow. It's also disappointing to come to that point. But there are a number of things that can cause people to misinterpret the Scriptures to fit their life. We could cite anything from mental divorce to not obeying government leaders simply because we don't agree with what they say. But we are still under the authority as long as their authority does not require us to contradict God's law. Second of all, I believe we can learn that Christians often imitate other Christians. This is even mentioned by John that we should be imitators of good. Those who do good are imitators of God. We can choose to imitate good or evil. If we do not choose, we have still made a choice nonetheless. A third lesson I believe we can learn is that Christians often follow others to rule by them by intimidating them. It's a very dangerous area for a Christian to fall into. If we imitate someone without comparing them to the true standard of Christ, we could follow a modern-day Diotrephes. Some members would follow Diotrephes to the point of letting him push other people out of the church. The Church of God is not something we should ever let anyone push us away from. We are to withstand them, like Diotrephes, to the face and rebuke them. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 13, we're told, Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all to stand. This is something that we must do to defend the Word of God in the end. Imagine our example if we let someone push us out of favor with God. How would that influence someone else to become a child of God if we're not doing God's will ourselves? So, who are some examples that we can look at in the Scriptures and learn from? The first one I came across is in 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 14, where we read of David being mentioned here. We see Samuel telling Saul that the kingdom's going to be taken away from him and be given to David. We read in verse 14, Now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after my own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. David, we see from this verse, is a man after God's own heart. And I'm sure we all agree that David was a good man. But not long in 2 Samuel chapter 11, we read that David committed not just adultery, but murder. Good people sometimes fall and do bad things. But what God looks at is the heart. And David was truly sorry that he did those acts. He was not sorry that he got caught. He was sorry he did it in the first place. There are some in the Scriptures that we read evil about, but there's some we also read a lot of good about. In our Vacation Bible School a short time ago, we studied about Joseph, how he treated his brothers good, even though he could have gotten that bittersweet revenge. How good would it have felt for him to take revenge on them for all those years of him being alone and the thoughts that I'm sure he had that nobody loved him? Is there any worse feeling than to think that nobody loves you? That's a feeling that I don't think many of us know. Joseph was a young man that I have much respect for. How hard would it be to be sold by your siblings to a foreigner and then made a slave to another foreigner, possibly even in a place where he didn't speak the language, and then thrown into prison, and then still hold true to your faith in God? Many young men, I fear, would feel that God had left them, and therefore they would leave God. Another young man that I've had much respect for is Joshua. He's a man who later in life was called a man of great faith. He's a good example that the majority is not always right. In fact, some would say the majority is hardly ever right. He was willing to stand up with Caleb and to say that with God's help, we can conquer Canaan. He was a great example to us. Even later in years, after they had taken the kingdom, Joshua said in Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that are on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." He was, as we will be, rewarding in his life for his service and faith to God, either for good or for evil. Another man we can look at is Daniel. Daniel's a young man who serves as another good example. Daniel was somewhere around 15 years old or so when he was taken from his home and pressed into service for a king of the country that conquered his home. The king would be someone that most people would pretty much obey at any cost. He'd take off your head if he doesn't like you. However, in Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 8 through 20, which I won't take the time to read, but we see that Daniel refused to eat the meat and drink the wine that was placed before him, which violated his standards, and he stood his ground until he was given what was right. Also, later in his life, in chapter 6, we see his example once again of not backing down to peer pressure when it was commanded not to pray to any other god than the gods of the Medes and Persians. Daniel could have went up to his house, and kept his window closed, and hid the fact that he was praying to God. But his faith would not let him be a poor example. I'm sure ones have already seen him praying in that fashion, and that's why they made the decree. He did what was right at whatever cost. We also can look at the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In Daniel chapter 3, we read of their faith allowed them to withstand a king by not being a part of something that was wrong, even to the point of telling the king that, "I don't have to answer you." That would take a lot of courage to stand up to a king that could execute you like that and say, "I don't have to answer you. God will take care of me. And if God chooses to let us perish, okay." But if time permitted, we could also go through and read the book of Job. This is something we were discussing in the teenage class today. Job was someone who, after everything went wrong, he kept himself pure when his world was crumbling down around him. Imagine for a moment that we actually have a fortune. Losing that fortune, losing your family, losing all your health, and ending up like Job was. And all that he had left was some friends and his wife, which were pretty much telling him, his wife say, curse God and die. His friends were saying, you had to have done something wrong. God would not do this to you if you hadn't. That would be an example of how we should deal with trouble. We can also discuss the Apostle Paul. He's a man who suffered much because he preached Jesus. And he was nearly killed many times. But Paul did not give up. When he was in jail, he sang praises. When he was in prison and house arrest, he would preach to anybody who would listen. When he was given a chance to speak to rulers, he spoke about Christ. He did not speak about himself. He was a great example of a servant of God. So we've discussed some examples of old. What are some examples we see today? We could point out some of the music leaders and those who use lyrics that are just flat out wrong, or even talk about their music videos which go along with their evil lyrics. We could compile a large list of celebrities who don't care about marriage enough not to cheat on their spouse. Perhaps we could point out some supermodels who, even on TV commercials, now parade around in less than a bathing suit. These are but a mere few examples of the world to Christians. But what are about our examples to the world abroad? What does our example say to the troubled world around us? What does our example say when we badmouth our government leaders? In Romans chapter 13 and verse 1 we begin, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive themselves damnation. It is clear that God gave all authority, and like every one of us, they and us will give account of what we do, and they will give an account of how they use that authority. But what about language that would make a sailor blush, so to speak? In my job, I usually hear a lot of conversations. And a lot of times, most of them ain't fit to hear. And so often, the ones that are speaking are not the men or the sailors, it's the women. Some of the women talk about doing things that nobody should do, and some of them talk just such vulgarity that they ought to be ashamed to use that language. We could also discuss disregarding man's law, such as speeding or running red lights. Ken will tell you this happens very often, but how often is it a Christian that is running that red light or speeding? What about our example of being a bad example? What does that say to others? We're told in Mark chapter 16, verse 15, and he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. But in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, we're told, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So often I think that when we are in the world, we become part of the world too often. We are told to be in the world, but not part of the world. So what about our example of being in a place where a child of God should never be? What about our example, be good or evil, if we're seen in a strip club or a bar or even on a beach with loads of people with nothing on? What if we were in New Orleans for Mardi Gras? What if our face was captured at Mardi Gras and we're plastered on a website or newspaper? Everyone can tell we're obviously at Mardi Gras. And we're obviously, may or may not be drunk, but we're obviously around people that are not fit to be around. What would our example be? Why should we be there? Sure, we may be able to be in an environment without sinning ourselves, but what does our example show? What if a weak brother or sister sees that website or that newspaper and says, well, they're there, why can't I be there? What if no one sees us at all? But we know that they knew we were there. Perhaps somebody told them, perhaps somebody told them about the newspaper or whatever. As Christians, we should never be in a situation that we would not want Jesus to return and find us. The sad part of the story is that Jesus is already there. He is everywhere. When we walk on a beach full of naked people, Jesus is there. When we walk on Mardi Gras, Jesus is there. When we talk evil of our rulers, our bosses, or our leaders, Jesus hears that. So, anytime we're in a place or doing something that our example is not what it should be, Jesus is seeing that example. And He is not the only one. Others will see it. Once again, I'm reminded of the Footprints in the Sand poem. When we think we are at the bottom of our life, when we're completely alone, we see only one set of footprints in the sand. But that is when Jesus is carrying our load and our burden. So I ask you today, have you been making Jesus' burden easier or heavier? Are you working for Him or is He working for you? If you have done any of these things that are wrong, if they're in a private nature, please stop listening to me and pray to God for forgiveness. However, if those things that you've done are of a public nature, please come forward, or if you have never named the name of Christ as the Son of God and your Savior, please come forward now and be waited on.